This week on RSBNB Update, the Rex Matriarchs are finally here, providing an entry-level PVM experience. We have a full rundown on mechanics and drops. RuneScape Mobile arrives this summer, and we gain a first glimpse at what wishes may bring to RuneScape and offer our opinions. This is RSBNB Update, episode 826, recorded Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Wrecking the Rex Matriarchs. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. It is Rex Matriarch and Combat Week here at RSBNB Update. And, of course, because of that, David is here to discuss these dinos. Welcome back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while.
I think you were last on Raksha, right?
Yeah, so also a dino.
Yeah, and I think we know which one you're going to prefer, perhaps, but we'll get to that all in good time. But, Tanis, you're here as you are, as each and every week
That's
as well.
Right. Yep, I'm going to do what David tells me to do and go stand in the corner and eat. Well,
no, I think you could handle these. I think you could handle these.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
So of course, what we have with this is these were going to be the first update that was going to come out before the login lockout happened in March. So as a result, this is an update that many, many people have been waiting for. We're going to run through the mechanics of these bosses, talk about the drop tables, and ultimately end up with who should fight them. But of course, if you want to follow along, we have full show notes at update.rsbme.com. I am Shane12088. Tanis can be found in-game at Tanis79, and David's RSN is Cabru. So, I think we just ought to start off with the brief reminder that it is also Combat Week. In terms of what you get this time round, no reclaim costs on death, no Ring of Death charges lost on death, increased luck on the rare drop table, reduced cost of swapping archaeology relics, reduced invention drain rate, double Reaper points, double Slayer points, and double combat and Slayer XP, and you also have access to the Elder Overload Golems, except this time they're in War's Retreat, and you get an hour-long Elder Overload buff. It's also worth noting this time around that Iron Man accounts do not have access to the Elder Overloads or the Double Combat and Slayer XP, which I think is fair. That took a couple days to sort out last time we had that, but nonetheless, I think that was a good change to make on that. So, let's dive into Rex Matriarchs. Dave, is there anything you want to say before we begin?
I think that the only thing worth saying is that the Rex Matriarchs are very much as advertised in terms of being targeted towards low/mid-level players with kind of a weird caveat. And I found them to be pretty straightforward and easy and super accessible. So I think they were advertised. They came as advertised.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, they're located at Anachronius, though the easiest way to get there currently is just to use the portal in War's Retreat. Otherwise, you can find them through the little teleport obelisk north of the Anachronia base camp, I believe it is. Now,
they look super good.
Yeah, they really do. And, you know, this is something that Jagex has always been doing well in the recent years, is just the sheer amount of graphical emphasis put on environment. And you can see that in the environment in their cave, too. And, you know, there's lots of other little nooks and crannies that are left unexplored in that cave. So it's kind of interesting that there might be, or it's foreshadowing, I think, that there might be something else later down there eventually. But we'll leave that and just jump straight into the combat side of it right now. So there's three dinosaurs, and they're all, of course, based around specific combat styles. Which one would you like to would you like us to take on first to talk about here?
Well, I think it makes sense to talk about Orichalca first, since that's the first one you see, which
the melee
is the
boss.
Big, Yes. Is it Bagrata or Bagrata? Or is there a hard A? And is it a Bagrata Rex Matriarch?
I think it's a Bagrata.
Okay. So it's weak to magic and specifically fire spells. Something that is interesting about this one is that it has in some ways the most punishing but also least punishing mechanic of all of them. Essentially what this one does is she freezes you after 3 melee hits. And the effect of the freeze is that for a period of time, your abilities have a much longer cooldown than normal. So all of your abilities take 10 seconds or longer to be able to cast. So it just really, really slows down how quickly you can kill it. This one is a little tedious because that's certainly an annoying mechanic to deal with, but if you're familiar with the normal spell Entangle, which requires nature runes to cast, you could just entangle it and then take a few steps back and fight it with magic. And as soon as it is freed from the entangle, just entangle it again and take a step back. And at no point will it even be able to damage you because you could just entangle, you know, chain entangles together. And so that's how I am doing my kills at that boss.
I haven't fought this one yet because, quite honestly, I don't have magic gear that is acceptable anymore at this point in time. And this is one that I did want to take on because I think from my research on what I have found, and you can, of course, provide your own input on this as we move through them, people say, in general, the consensus is that this is the second easiest one, of course, next to Wrath is the green one.
Yeah, I would agree this one is the second easiest one for sure.
Yeah.
It can't really be AFK'd, though, super effectively, I don't think.
Right. Because you got to keep watching for that entangle and making sure that you don't get frozen in time. Because, you know, if your abilities ultimately run up to a point where you're going to have them taking multiple minutes to cool down, you're not really going to be doing much damage at the end of the day, are you?
Right. And this is one factor that makes it somewhat more challenging is that Entangle can splash pretty easily. So I was not on a Slayer task, nor was I using a Maniacal because I wasn't using a specific aura for one style since I was fighting all 3 of them. And Entangle splashes a lot with tier 92 weapons or even an Inquisitor staff. The defense on these things is hefty. And I'm kind of curious about the decision and thinking behind that, given that it's targeted for mid-level players with 70-plus combat stats and tier 70 gear.
Yeah, I want to talk about this after we go through the mechanics of all of them, because we'll notice a trend as sure. as we move through them. Anything else on our Auric Halka?
Not particularly. It drops the Heart of the Warrior, as well as all of the other, as well as the drops that are shared between all 3 of them. Not too much to say, except either you want to stun lock it and surge and bladed dive around so it can't hit you, or if you are like me and would rather put a lot less effort in, just entangle it and then, you know, don't let it ever even attack you.
Yeah. So stuns work as well in addition to entangle is what you're saying with this from your magic ability.
Right. Okay. As do ice spells. So you could also use ice barrage if you wanted to.
All right, that makes sense. Pathentrakan or Wrathis next?
Let's do Wrathis next.
All right. Well, I can actually come in on this one because this is one that I have been able to kill many times, and based on what I've seen and what everybody else said, this one is definitely the easiest one, is going to be the one that is farmed, and this is the one you want to take down with Moli. You know, I am not a PVMer, let's just put this out there at this point in time, so as a result of this, I was actually pleasantly surprised that I was able to get multiple kills on my first run in here with this boss. And, you know, you really didn't even tell me much of what needed to be done. You just said, effectively, you know, bring some anti-poison, have a good revolution bar set up, and you'll be fine, and you can absolutely soul split directly through this entire thing. So, speaking from that perspective, somebody who doesn't PVM and was able to take this on multiple times and effectively farm this boss, you are right that this is exactly as advertised on the tin. So what happens with Rathus is that this is the green dinosaur. You start attacking it with melee. It will attack you with its ranged auto attack, and then periodically throughout the fight, it will also spit poison out, green blobs of poison that appear on the ground. And this is something I was wondering about you, Tanis, and like there's a green smoke kind of effect to it that you can see in addition to it, like a green particle effect, but the poison itself is green. So I was wondering how that would probably be from an accessibility standpoint for you.
Well, I mean, it depends on what the contrast is and if there's, you know, background clutter, that's going to get mixed in with that. I'm thinking that probably the best way that I'm going to deal with that is also to go to our color filters that we have and just see, play around with those and see if one of them will pop.
All right.
And hope that the one that does doesn't make everything else look crazy.
Right. And The part about this boss that makes it AFKable is that if you use Anti-Poison +++, you can effectively just tank the poison and not worry about needing to evade it. And part of the mechanic also is that if you manage to evade and absorb most of the poison that's on the ground, you limit the amount that Rathus will heal itself with, which of course is good if you want to make the fight faster. If you try and run away from Rathus, it will charge you and do rapid damage to you. And I think the only way to get out of this is with freedom. Correct me if I'm wrong, David.
Yeah, you just want to not do that. It just hits hard.
Yeah.
The charge is the only thing that Rathus can do that hits hard. The best thing is to just do absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, with this, I was kind of thinking, okay, so that's that one. This is, I think, we agree that the easiest way to get into this boss. Is there anything based on what I described here that you feel makes this one too easy compared to the other two, or is there some kind of balancing thing?
I mean, it's a little bit silly that it's only mechanic. The silly part is that it's only real mechanic is completely neutralized by anti-poison. So, and it's not even like at Grigorovich, for example, when you drink an anti-poison, it could, you know, start chewing through that anti-poison. This is even like that. When I did Rathus, I did an hour AFK. I brought no food whatsoever. I didn't even bring an Excalibur. I did not use a Vamprism Aura. I did not use a Vamprism Scrimshaw. I used a Penance Aura and good gear, to be fair. Like I used, you know, Trim Masterwork and a Trim Masterwork Spear and an Amulet of Souls, things like that. And I just sat there and clicked once every 6 minutes to prevent myself from logging out. And I used zero food and zero prayer the entire time. I mean, maybe I used a couple. I may have clicked on the Elven Ritual Shard a couple times. But because the anti-poison totally neutralizes the special, you could just sit there completely AFK if you have Masterwork and Spear.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I found as well. I did use a bit more food because I probably wasn't doing the same amount of DPS as you were to, you know, factor in with Soul Split. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, this is immensely farmable to the point where its drop table is going to come into effect. And we'll talk a little bit about that after.
And I think if you have access to less good gear, you could just use a Vamprism Scrimshaw, and that'll probably be all you need.
And then
you probably wouldn't need food at all.
Yeah, I had no issue with Trim Masterwork as well. And, I mean, I definitely could have gone down to tier 80 on this, and I think I still would have been fine.
Yeah, I think there were some people on release who tested it with Bandos, and they had no trouble whatsoever with tier 70 armor. The problem, though, is that, again, pretty high defense – So we'll talk about that later. But, you know, yeah. And definitely the easiest by a lot. Now, if you don't have anti-poison, it hits really hard. So I tried doing it without anti-poison and almost died.
Okay.
Because the poison pool just, like, hits, like, 5Ks. But assuming you have anti-poison, it totally negates that mechanic. It hits you sub 50. So it turns something that deals 5K hits into something that deals like 32, 35, 43, you know, like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And factoring in Masterwork also, of course, helps with that. All right. Let's move to the blue one, Pthentraken. This is the electricity-based dinosaur that attacks with magic. And you would definitely want to take this one down with ranged. Just for fun, after getting my first kill on Rathus, I went over to the blue one and tried to stab it, and it didn't go well. But of course, that's a topic about defense that we'll come back to after we talk about Pthen tracking. But how exactly do you take this one out?
Yeah, so this one has the highest hitting auto attacks of any of them. So the red one, if you're entangling it or stun locking it, it'll never hit you. Rathus doesn't hit very hard at all. This one has somewhat high auto attacks, so in a pattern. But if you pay attention to the pattern, every third hit or so, you could get in a really big resonance. So I was able to do it without any eating, just because I would resonance HP. My HP back, but it's definitely the hardest to just sit in soul split. It has two mechanics that, as far as I know, can't be prevented. The first one is it shoots some lightning on the ground. There's plenty of warning for this, though.
Yeah, there's a shadow.
Yeah, there's a big shadow in several seconds. And it's exactly like the Vindicta Flames, so you just don't want to sit in the lightning and you're fine. And then the second one is you get a blue bar above your head, and if that bar fills all the way, a beam of lightning comes down from the sky and hits the spot that you're on, but it doesn't move. So if you just move as your bar fills, then there's no damage.
I also saw that you get the overcharged buff from that one.
Yeah. So you will be doing a lot of damage, but you know, you don't want to be sitting in the beam or it'll hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, so this is basically Dino Pikachu then.
Yeah, exactly. also very pretty. Really cool looking.
I think we have to say that for all of them, honestly, you know, and this one probably stands out the most because of the contrasting colors associated with it. So what did you use equipment-wise to take this one down?
So my best bow that I have is a Saren God bow. I went in with Ascensions at first because Ascensions are certainly much more damaged than an SGB.
Yeah.
But because accuracy is such a problem, I found that I was actually doing way more damage with a Saren God bow than I was with Ascensions, which is the first time that's been true since the release of Bacriminal Bolts years ago. So if you have a Nox bow laying around or something, this... Or a Hex Hunter bow is another good option. Definitely want to be using a bow that fires arrows if it's an option. Now, crossbows are perfectly fine. You'll just have slower kills because the accuracy won't be quite as good.
Yeah, and I can attest to that. You know, soul splitting and whatnot with this, I did have to bring an entire inventory and yak of food to get a kill based on how this was going because of the stronger auto attacks, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and if you're not using resonance and prayer flicking, then
it's definitely and that's what I thought. I thought, okay, you can do this with prayer flicking, flick to ranged prayer to protect from that. I think it's a 2,000-ish ranged auto attack it will do from time to time. If you did that, I'd imagine you would have fewer difficulties with this. So this would be a good boss to kill ordinarily, you're going to have to bring some of your Raksha prayer flick mentality into this.
I would say of the three, Rathus is a God Wars Dungeon 1 boss, assuming you're bringing anti-poison. I don't know why you wouldn't at this point. It's pretty cheap. So assuming you're using anti-poison, Rathus is basically a God Wars Dungeon 1 boss. Orichalca is... you just have to entangle it. So, I mean, it's a God Wars Dungeon 1 boss that you have to entangle. And then... is it Fenthraken? Is
that how you're speaking? I have no idea how we're supposed to pronounce this.
Okay, well, Fenthraken feels closer to a God Wars Dungeon 2 level boss, or maybe QBD or something like
that. All right, that makes sense. Also, insulated boots apparently reduce the damage of the electrical attacks drastically.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure why you would sacrifice damage from better boots when you could just move one square away, but sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then I guess from that point, would that change anything in terms of what you prayer protect then? Or
I probably wouldn't use insulated boots, but you know, I didn't really have difficulty prayer flicking it, but maybe if someone finds that challenging and really wants to do this one, then
yeah, apparently it drastically reduces the amount of lightning damage.
Right.
I'm going to have to give that a try with this because I want to see how much it helps on that front.
Is that for auto attacks or just the special attack?
The converging lightning.
Okay, so that's... well, I mean, that special attack just seems really easy to avoid to me.
Yeah,
so
that's the one in the lines, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that seems...
okay.
I mean, to me, you know, moving two squares away is not that big of a deal.
All right.
Especially given how well it's telegraphed. I mean, you found it to be very well telegraphed.
Oh,
right?
yeah. And I mean, I was able to kill it. Just the auto attacks were the problem. I think I only got hit once or twice by the converging lightning.
Okay, yeah, that,
so
that
it's
makes
not
sense.
It's not a huge issue, I find. But, I mean, I guess if you want that extra little buff along the way, you know, of course, keeping in mind, insulated boots takes you all the way back down to level 37 Slayer, tier 16 item. So, I mean, you give up, you know, your ranging boots or whatever other boots you're going to be using with this, so... all right, let's talk about the elephant in the room here, defense on this, because if you're not using the appropriate combat type, you're not going to do any damage. And as you mentioned, if you're fighting Fenthraken with bolts instead of arrows, you're going to see a notably reduced amount of damage coming in. And same thing if you're fighting Rathus with say a slash weapon instead of a stab weapon, which she is weak to. So how do you feel about this? And I know we had a discussion yesterday on this. So let's just start by summing up how defense works in relation to the combat triangle when we see it like this.
Yeah, so the part that makes perfect sense that they were clear on from the beginning is that you cannot use a style that is different from the one it's weak to. The same is true at Daggonoth Kings. You cannot kill Daggonoth Rex with melee or ranged. You have to use magic. So that part makes sense. It's kind of the legacy of this type of boss. The part I don't understand is the extent to which they gave it defense. So if you look at how damage is calculated, it's a combination of the boss's defense level and their armor rating. And so the obviously the higher armor rating and the higher defense level, the more difficult it is to damage. So to give it some perspective, the Rex Matriarchs are, I'm not 100% sure on the calculations, but either the second or third highest defense boss in the game. So the Rex Matriarchs have an armor rating of 28-29 and a defense level of 96. To compare that to the highest defense boss of Yakamaru, Yakumaru has 99 defense and 2765 armor. So it has more armor than Yakumaru. Raksha has 2178 armor and 85 defense. So it has far more armor. It's about 30% more armor than Raksha and a much higher defense level. It has over double the armor rating of Solak. It has more armor rating than Virago. So this the only two bosses that have comparable armor ratings are Nex Angel of Death and Yakumaru, and that's it. So the reason that it's not quite a one-to-one is that those bosses don't have affinity-based weaknesses, whereas these do. So when using the proper type of the proper weapon type, so stabbing, for example, you get a significant affinity of 90, which greatly increases your accuracy compared to those two. But at the same time, even with a tier 92 weapon in the same style that it's weak to, so for example, a Trend Masterwork Spear would be the best weapon to use against Rathis because it's a stabbing weapon, you still splash.
Yeah.
With Kopeshes, which are slashing weapons, you splash quite a lot. The same is true when you're using fire spells and an Inquisitor Staff or a Staff of Sliske at Orichalc. What is it?
Orichalca.
Yeah, at Orichalca, you splash. If you're using air spells, you splash a lot. And then at Fenthraken, even with the Saren God Bow, which is the highest accuracy form of arrows that you could use, and it's weak to arrows, you still splash. Now, that probably isn't true on Slayer Task or if using a Zerk Aura, but because you're required to hybrid and switch styles, using a Zerk Aura doesn't really make sense unless you're only fighting one. And
yeah,
my concern is that it's been basically since Telos and briefly Raksha. So Raksha briefly had an affinity issue, but it was just a bug and they just fixed it. And then, now everyone's 100% accuracy at Raksha. But basically it's been since Telos that we've had a boss where you would splash with the best in slot gear. So it's been about 4 years since we've had splashing in the game for new content. And given this is targeted towards players with tier 70 weapons, I imagine that the kills will be extremely long and kind of grindy just because of the enormous amount of splashing that you're going to see with a tier 70 weapon.
Now, my theory on this, and just taking one step back, I don't know if we mentioned this during the Rathis segment, but if you don't absorb the poison, it will heal. Just like Raksha does from that, and then get the little uber heal thing popping up above your head. I was unsure if we mentioned why you might want to absorb the poison with Rathis. But this discussion got me thinking, what if the whole idea behind, in effect, locking these bosses in to their exact weakness when you're fighting them. What if that's a bit of a strategy to teach the combat triangle? Granted, it doesn't really need to be used anywhere else, but it would make sense if you were trying to, maybe use this as a teachable moment for the combat triangle. What happens, if you go up against something that is strong against the type that you're using?
Well, I think that part is totally fine. I think it's fine to force people to use the combat triangle. I think what isn't fine is even when you're using the combat triangle correctly, you still splash a ton. So, for example, they could have easily lowered the armor and just made the bosses immune to a different type. So if you tried to fight Rathis with mage or range, it would just be immune to those. You just wouldn't do any damage. So I think that it's kind of strange that even when observing the combat triangle and using best in slot gear, they still have splashing. I don't know how many people have read it, but I wrote an article maybe a year or so ago about splashing, and I just think it's not a very fun mechanic.
No, and it's very mystical behind the scenes as to how it works, because we really don't know, you know, at the surface level, unless you do a lot of reading behind the scenes in terms of that. So following from that, and, you know, you're entirely right. You could have made it just 100% immune to the alternate combat style. But could it be being done in a way to, in effect, slow down kills? But
I mean, yeah, clearly it's being done to slow down
right.
kills.
But yeah. at the same time, there's people like yourself who are going to be able to have enough combat skill to, in effect, get around from that. And the only people this is really going to hurt are the people with that tier 75 and tier 80 gear.
Yeah, so when I was doing these and kind of trying, I was getting between 80 and 90 kills an hour. Obviously, I'm not really planning on doing that too much because it's a lot of effort for
very little reward.
But you know, theoretically, one could do that. I just think that I just think it's weird to say to new players or you, because I would assume that most players who are in the 70s are relatively new to the game. Because these days, going from 1 to 75 attack and strength and magic and range is real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, you know, here's this boss we created just designed for you, and then you show up and you can't even hit it. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good introduction to PVM. I think that it introduces players to a mechanic that hasn't been used in like 4 years that no one really likes. And I think it's a shame because all of their content for the last few years has not used that mechanic. So it's not a good representation of what high level PVM is like, because splashing outside of older bosses isn't really a thing anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll have to, maybe there'll be a Q&A on a live stream with this going forward, because they didn't at all talk about the mechanics when they unveiled these a month and a bit ago. So there's you know, lots of questions and whatnot that can be asked on this. But nonetheless, I think they are very farmable, which of course leads to the question of the drop tables. Tanis, you've been listening here, and you, based on what we said, do you think you could pull this off?
I don't think I have a chance of being able to entangle something constantly, but poison, I could do that. I had a question for David. I mean, I know this is probably blasphemous from a PVM point of view, but from a staying alive point of view, would poison purge, like the aura, work for that?
I mean, it would just be redundant. Like, so if you drink a dose of anti-poison plus, it gives you the immunity for 12 minutes. So it would just be redundant. Like, if you thought that you couldn't click every 12 minutes on your potion, then maybe. But I think it would be better. I think it'd be a lot better to use like vampirism or something.
Okay. Yeah, I just checked to see if it would do the same thing if you didn't have the, you know, the anti-poison. Or what have you?
Maybe, but I think it'd be much better to, because it lasts 12 minutes, and it's unlikely a kill will take as long as 12 minutes. I mean, you could even just like drink an anti-poison every kill if you're worried about your buff bar. But I think it's not like anti-poison plus poison purge is even better. It'd be the exact same.
Okay.
And also, Shane, I think if they wanted to slow down the kill rate, I'm always a bigger fan of giving us 100% accuracy and giving them more life points. It's just right. A lot more satisfying. Like, even if it's the same math-wise for how long it takes, it's just a lot more satisfying to see abilities connecting than to see those stupid little shields pop up.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, if they wanted to make something immune, that can be done as well. From the other types, so there are ways around that, and you know, I think if we ever have the chance, we'll ask something to that effect to the Combat Council. But given these things can be farmed, let's talk about the drops. They always drop 2 dinosaur bones. They'll drop between 4 and 6 damaged dinosaur hides, which of course you can alchemize. It's also got a really weird drop where it has the chance to just randomly at some point drop 600k coins. Oh, Tannis is having a beagle alert.
Well, yep. Yep. Oh, between
goodness.
Between 69K and 693K. Yeah.
It's also got the ability to drop more noted damaged dinosaur hides. It drops super ranging, super magic potions depending on the type that you're fighting. Arbok seeds.
Or strength.
Okay. Yeah. Watermelon seeds. Now this is 20 to 30 watermelon seeds, a common drop.
Yeah, I mean, those things are going to tank to nothing. I mean, good for POF. There's another free seed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can't imagine these are going to stay 3K each for very long.
No. Between 9 and 10 toad flax?
9 and 12.
Oh, whoops. But, yeah. Inert adrenaline crystals, medium and large rune salvage, onyx bolt tips, and another drop I have an issue with, between 8 and 20 dragon stones as a common drop. I did an hour and I got around 60-odd dragon stones.
Well, they've been at ALK value for ages now, right?
So, right. And I don't know. And this is something that was brought to me by a number of people in Clan Quest, is they just felt this drop table is very weird.
Well, you haven't mentioned the weirdest bit, that they have a rare chance of dropping an ancient scale, a draconic energy, or a serenic scale. The serenic scale is not that weird, but how do we feel about that? A chance of dropping an ancient scale or a draconic energy. It's so weird.
Because these were limited initially to the elite dungeons, right?
Right. And also, it's just bizarre to me to have a boss that is targeted towards mid-level players, probably newer players, you know, beautiful graphics, get them into PVM. And then they get a drop that is used for tier 92 armor that costs 600 mil to make or whatever. Like, it just seems so weird.
Maybe they're just trying to make it worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's bad. I don't think the drop table is bad. I think that toad flax is very welcome from an Iron Man perspective, because toad flax is probably the most annoying herb to get your hands on as an Iron Man. And, you know, if you PVM, you use a lot of Ceridomen Bruce. So I like that. From a mainscape perspective, toad flax along with spirit weed are one of the last couple of herbs that are really profitable to farm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think it's probably fine, because people farming, it's better to do spirit weed anyways. But still, you know, that's something.
Yeah, and they did go down a bit this week. I'd already seen that.
Oh yeah, I mean, they'll go down a lot because Rathus is AFKable. So yeah. For me, I'm gonna do probably. But depends how long I get pet, but I'm gonna AFK Rathus on my main until I get a pet. So I'm gonna. Plenty of accounts are gonna be doing that. So there's gonna be a lot of toad flax and watermelon seeds and stuff brought into the game.
Yeah. That distresses me to a degree. But as you mentioned, you can also get the pets. You can get the dinosaur eggs. All of them drop Heart of the Berserker, which is used to make the Reaver's Ring. And each one, of course, also drops a Heart of the Seer for Fentraken, Heart of the Archer for Rathus, and Heart of the Warrior for Orichalca, that are used to make the advanced rings, of course, that everybody went on a run from the Dagonoth Kings, from the Stalker's Ring, in the case of Rathus, the Channeler's Ring in the case of Fentraken, which is really interesting. When we looked at this, it was that stacking critical chance bonus during channeling magic abilities.
It's pretty good, I think.
And, of course, the other one is the Champion's Ring, 30 melee strength, 3% critical chance with bleed. So, and, you know, just fun little augments to the Dagonoth King rings.
Yeah.
Which one is your favorite of those rings, would you say?
Well, the Beaver's Ring is by far the best because, well, I mean, it sure is not by far the best at the dinosaurs because your accuracy is so bad. But anywhere that your accuracy will not suffer as a result of using the Reaver's Ring, it's certainly the best one, which is
because it gives you an accuracy hit.
Yes, it lowers your accuracy but increases your critical hit buff significantly. So it's like having another Biting Three equipped. So it's a really big, it's a very large DPS boost for anywhere that it doesn't take your accuracy below 100, which is a lot of places.
All right.
So it's very good. The Mage Ring is the most interesting.
The Channeler's Ring.
Yeah, I would say those are the only one of the other three that are worth looking into. I don't think that the Archer's Ring is going to be good unless bows get Backramental Arrows, and in which case, sure. And I don't think that the Warrior's Ring is particularly great. I think it's fine, but I don't think it's worth spending money on it unless it's, you know, like the last thing that you're getting. If you have an offhand dyed flanking tier 92 switch for all three styles, then sure, go ahead and get that.
All right. So the Reaver's Ring and the Magic Ring are the most interesting one. Of course, the Warrior's Ring, critical strike chance against bleeding targets, and like you said, unless that's probably the last thing that you're getting. But how do we feel about Lanikea's spear?
The spear, best in slot for ED3 bots. So I'm not sure if the bots will buy them, but because they're currently using tier 70 staff. But if you're an ED3 bot or gold farmer, this is a great update for you.
Who else?
It's really, really good for mid-level Slayer.
Right,
anything up to Abyssal Demons, I would say.
Because
Abyssal
it has tier 75 accuracy with tier 90 damage.
Yeah, so it's and it has that little poison additional. So it's the best weapon for ED3 gold farm trash runs. And it is a great choice for anyone who is doing mid-level Slayer. I would say if you are trying to get 99 Slayer and can't afford a Scythe, this is probably now better than a Dragon Rider Lance. So it used to be if you can't afford a Scythe, a Dragon Rider Lance was the best, and now I think this is probably the best weapon for most tasks where you would be using a Scythe.
Yeah, because the starting price of this week is 133 mil.
Yeah, but it's already like 40 mil.
Okay, so on par with a Dragon Rider Lance then. And
Yeah. About 10 mil per piece. So I got a Savage Spear cap today and I sold it for 10 mil. So
absolutely, you
about 10 mil.
It absolutely amazes me how much the Scythe has gone up in value over the last 18 months or so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a whole reason, I think, behind mass inflation. I think it's because we need another bot nuke. But yeah, I mean, everything has gone up in price.
Yeah, and you know that's out of the scope of this podcast, but nonetheless, I think that pretty much covers the matriarchs. We went through the drop tables, we went through the mechanics of each of them, we went through the question about defense and accuracy. So you obviously see yourself farming these for pets. Any other reason for you, high-level PVMer?
Oh, I mean, Gold Reaper. I want to get Gold Reaper eventually. It's not really like an achievement I'm focusing on super intensively, but I totally want to do Gold Reaper at some point. But outside of that, there's no reason for me to be doing this. It's definitely not content that's made for high-level PVM. I generally think that it's a missed opportunity because of the accuracy thing, because I think that it's certainly not made for high-level PVMers. There's nothing that they're going to find interesting, and the rewards aren't even close to being worthwhile. And I don't think that it's going to be super exciting for mid-level players compared to other stuff. I mean, it definitely does introduce you to some mechanics with Fenthraken. I think Fenthraken is the best designed of the three, for sure, in terms of being a stepping stone type boss.
Right.
But
right.
I think that any mid-level player who doesn't care about pets or titles would be better off at Vindicta or Grigorovich or Hellwear. And then, you know, you could sell your much more expensive drops from there to buy the stuff from here if you really want it.
All right. I think that makes sense. Tanis, any questions or thoughts before we move on?
I am kind of surprised something is maybe pushing the Lance out of its, you know, hallowed spot for that it's had for so long. That's really curious to me. Really interested in seeing if that maintains, because I want to know, like, what are the components? Like, are there any, you know, components that people are trying to get? Like, that's been one of the reasons I think the Lance stays so high value. So
all the components for the spear are dropped by these bosses.
I think Tanis is referring to invention components, right?
Yeah.
The Lance will always be what it is because Illyjonkin components are for Aftershock come from the Lance. So that's always going to be expensive. Yeah.
This just gives Silent, and it has a chance of giving Stab, Blade, or Deflecting parts, as well as maybe giving Sharp and Stunning components.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to disassemble one of these.
Will come down. Dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, I expect... So I'm currently... They're currently about 10 mil per piece, four pieces, about 40 mil for the weapon. I expect it'll be like 10 mil within a couple months.
And given the way the GP works currently in the game, that's really not too bad for what you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 2 hours of gold farming at ED3.
Yeah.
Or even 1 hour if your team is good.
All right. Sounds good. Let's move on to the patch notes then this week. We only got a few patch notes in the slot. So starting off, Druids have cleaned up the area around the Tree of Balance. And Yak Track head slot items are now saved as presets for the new guard outfits. Various improvements have been made on the mobile client, including bug fixes, focusing around compliance and optimization. And now here's another question. If you do the crime and you do the time, players are no longer able to get infinite bloodwood logs from a bloodwood tree while using certain boosts. This was an unintentional bug, and the tree should now fall down as expected.
Okay.
We don't know what the boosts were, but of course it raises the whole question of bug abuse like we talked about last week. And you know,
I mean, I don't even want to know what it was, but...
And whether or not we should see bans or rollbacks on this, I think in this case, probably rollbacks, since it's, I don't think the economic impact is as great as being able to, you know, just farm the elite dungeons without doing the trash bosses.
This is the Bloodwood thing?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It was a slightly known bug that a famous YouTuber made a video about, and that's how Jagex found out about it. It was more just humorous than anything else. It just involved, you know, how pulse cores can increase your skilling levels.
Sure.
So basically, you would just have to sit at a place where pulse cores were going off until you got plus 10 in wood cutting. And then you would go chop an elder tree, and with every other perk combined, you were able to get infinite logs, but you had to log out every minute to not lose the pulse core boost, or you'd have to go back and get it again.
Oh my God.
I mean, it was just very cartoonish. I mean, no one would ever do that for an extended period of time, and it certainly didn't.
Right,
really,
so that
happen.
Puts us into the rollback category then.
Yeah, definitely. It was mostly just funny. that it was even possible. And then, you know, they took care of it quick. They just didn't know about it. And as soon as the YouTuber made the video, Jagex was like, hey, now we know about this. We're going to fix it real quick. And they did.
I feel like that's a setup.
Yeah.
Isn't that just a little too damn convenient?
Where have we heard that story before?
But I just feel like that's a little too convenient. Like, for the time... I mean, right, Shane? Like, come on. How do we have the discussion we had, and then now all of a sudden, the good guy... Seriously? Are we getting white knighted here?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know. I don't know either. In any case, fixed an issue on weapon poison potions of all tiers that incorrectly stated the chance to apply poison was 15%. Tooltip has been adjusted to match the correct 12.5%. Were you aware of this, David, that this was wrong?
Yeah, but the wiki always had her right.
Okay. And area loot key binds are no longer active while the chat box is in active focus, which makes sense because you want to, of course, type in your chat box. If that's the case, that's a priority with that. And of course, before we move on, we're going to have a bit of a discussion about the login lockout and what the Iron Man wishes are going to be and what everybody is going to have a chance to get on the wishes. But before that, coming hot off of patch notes, we have some really, really big news. And that is that, as of now, players on both iOS and Android can pre-register to get access to RuneScape Mobile when it launches later this summer on day one. I thought we were going to be looking at the fall, honestly, for this date. But it says summer. The iOS listing says June 17th. They're kind of being coy about whether that'll be the day or if it'll be a different day around that. But summer is nonetheless when we're targeting this year. This is a big deal, isn't it, Tennis?
Yeah, I mean, I won't quote the president, but it is a really big deal. And, I'm just going to put it out there. I don't think it's going to be the 17th. I think we're looking at June 1st.
All right. Well, let's have a look at the trailer, because I did put together this, really big trailer for this, and it's, floating around the internet. So here we go. This is a day that people have been waiting for since 2017 at this point, since it was first announced that they were doing something with mobile, and it's come a long way with this. We had a live stream this week covering the launch and everything that we see in this trailer. This trailer is designed to hook people in. It hooks me in, and it's going to hook in everybody who sees it on the iOS and Google Play Store. So we're going to go through a bit of the live stream here, some of the questions that they talked about. They had one of the marketing experts, Maud Bam, on. They also had Maud Ashers, who is in charge of the mobile team. And, of course, they also had Maud Stu to talk about the Dave and Dale tutorial, which we've already, of course, covered here on the podcast. But first, Maud Warden had a few words to share about this. And these can also, of course, be found in the news posting accompanying this live stream. He says, I'm going to quote a bit of it here, "After a long journey and no small effort, it feels especially great to bring RuneScape to our next platform, the world's largest gaming platform at that. This is another momentous opportunity to grow the citizenship of Gilanor, adding more beating hearts to a connected community and shared experience of millions. RuneScape is an MMO like no other. A special living world with endless discovery that transcends entertaining pixels on a screen to a place filled with people, connections, memories, and stories. It is a critical magic that only you as players can bring, and with our mission to extend this reach everywhere, you can now take your adventures with you wherever we want." And then he goes in and talks about how 6 months ago it was the Steam launch, and then how wonderful the community response to that was in terms of everybody bringing new people in. And the goal is to repeat that this time and take it even higher with RuneScape Mobile. And of course, they're probably wondering, why should I pre-register, or rather pre-order, a free-to-play game? Well, this was detailed in the live stream, and even if you are a RuneScape player and you say, ah, I can just pick it up on day one, if you pre-register on either iOS or Android, you will be helping the company and helping the game in terms of its day one exposure, because Apple and Google both look at this kind of thing behind the scenes, and based on the amount of inertia a product has when it's in its pre-order phase, it debuts higher and it has a higher chance of being featured on those stores. And of course, if you can be featured on the front page of one of these app stores, well, it's going to just suck a whole boatload of people in. So that was detailed on the live stream. What do you think of this, the push for pre-ordering?
I was surprised because I didn't realize that in any way. Like, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I didn't really know why you would do that. Because and then even then, I wasn't sure if people that were already in the beta would necessarily like do that, but they did touch on all that and clear.
Yeah, they did. And if you're already in the beta on Android, you don't need to do that. If you are in on iOS, I was able to still press the pre-order button, so I think iOS functions a little bit different than Android in that regard. So you're probably wondering, what exactly are we working up to? Well, with this, based on the number of pre-orders or pre-registrations that they get, a number of rewards will be unlocked, including the SoftBank hairstyle, the Magic Leap teleport animation, which is calling it the Magic Leap teleport device, the Cruxacal sword, Scales, the animated pet, and the Cruxacal armor. And the cherry on top to all this is a 7-day 50% XP boost. And based on how well we do, these will all be unlocked with release in June.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you are listening to this podcast and you have pressed the pre-order, pre-register button on iOS or Android, and you know somebody who has stopped playing, or you know somebody who is going to play and come back on mobile, and you want to bring them back in, tell a friend about this. Definitely go out there, and if you have friends that might have disappeared, or friends that are kind of on the edge of RuneScape, or even people that you just talk to day in and day out and they don't pay attention to this podcast, or they don't pay attention to the live streams, tell them to pre-register, because this is a community effort, and what we want to do with this, and I can get behind this, because I think we saw with the Steam launch just how many people came out for that, and what everybody did in terms of being so helpful, and we want to repeat that. And it was just so refreshing to see that after 20 years, this game can still do that for new players coming in. So I hope that everybody jumps up and down on this offer.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so too. And I think it's great the way that they're trying to activate kind of the base in that way.
Yeah.
You know, because how many mobile games already have a base of support? You know,
a 20-year-old base of support.
Right. So I mean, it's very possible for us to make a big splash when it is officially launched. And here's the other thing I want to say to tell your friends that, you know, may have played at one time, come back and try the mobile experience, because seriously, the using touch is a different way of playing RuneScape. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, even on an iPad to that degree. I know you've messed around with a bit of that too. Interesting message on that later on in the live stream. But let's dive into that. They worked with the people at Apple and Google to build this pre-order campaign. And apparently one of the guys at Apple who was helping them out with this is actually a big RuneScape fan and Iron Man player. So really enjoyed seeing what they were doing with this, and felt that, you know, this would help his hardcore Iron Man experience go even further than that. So that was a fun little anecdote that came out of the live stream with that. And they said over the past 4 months or so, there's been lots of research done on how to acquire new players, and this is so important for the App Store because the average App Store user, when they're looking at an app, stays on that app's page for 5 seconds before deciding whether or not they should install. 5 seconds. You have to make an impression. 5 seconds only.
And which made me wonder, like, is that just browsing or do people just know what they want?
I think it's just browsing. I think it's just browsing. And with this research, they actually found that the Nomad image that has been used over the past few months, as well as the current App Store icon, is the one that managed to draw most people in.
Interesting.
And it kind of makes sense that now, seeing with the emphasis on Nomad, why that was sent out in the 20-year anniversary package for the mouse mat. Thinking about it from that perspective. Livestream-wise, further emphasis was talked about in terms of the onboarding and the new player experience with Tutorial Island. And what they have said with this is that Tutorial Island, for all intents and purposes, you know, it's loved by the community for what it offers and how it onboards the existing players in the game. But it's based on a legendary long tutorial. It performed only marginally better than Ashdale when they brought it back. Of course, we remember Ashdale and remember Burthorpe before that. And then, of course, you go back to RS2, you have Tutorial Island. Tutorial Island, I guess the gold standard in desktop tutorials, doesn't really work on mobile because most mobile users will drop out of a tutorial, like Tutorial Island, in the first 5 minutes and don't come back. And we picked up on that when we looked at the Dave and Dale tutorial, didn't we?
Yeah.
In terms of how it just puts you right in there.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, they said in a segment that was run now by Mod Stew, he did a tutorial segment, which, of course, we love those. If you've ever watched one of those, they're definitely something to see. He said that RuneScape Mobile won't be squeezed, RuneScape won't be squeezed into a mobile game. And the tutorial has to be honest, and the goal in the tutorial is to foreground the joy and the essence of RuneScape. So, boiling that down, that's training skills, that's doing quests, and the combat system, which is everything that the Dave and Dale tutorial did. And we also commented on this when we went over the Dave and Dale tutorial, is that, whoa, we're getting thrown into a quest, and we're getting thrown into training our skills right away. Within minutes of starting this up, and that's precisely what the goal was with this tutorial. Let's see, continuing on with this, Stu also pointed out how the tutorial guides the player while simultaneously explaining RuneScape by having the player actually perform actions on screen and not necessarily hand-holding them in the specific way that we've seen tutorials in the past. And once again, we felt that, and that's the same thing that they did with archaeology. And questions, of course, came up. Will Dave and Dale, the Dave and Dale tutorial, be a mobile-only experience? And they said eventually they wanted to bring it to desktop, but there's some things that also need to be changed with it as well. And overall, the Dave and Dale tutorial is the end result of the company hiring more user experience professionals, which is something I think that we've said has also been needed over time as well. And special emphasis in the Dave and Dale tutorial is actually given to examine info because, you know, every quester in RuneScape loves looking at all the examine info as well. So it was all taken care of there.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that this provides was that soft guidance, but also rewarding exploration, and
yeah,
that was pretty cool. It was, I mean, this is legendary when Mod Stu does this, right? But yeah, I couldn't help but hear Sirion's voice when he made a bunch of these points. Not gonna lie.
yeah, that makes sense. Following that discussion went on to what the mobile client looks like and how things are going to improve going forward on this. This tutorial segment was about 20 minutes long, but some of the changes to the mobile client were also detailed in this time period, including some new app icons that were shown off for the first time. And looking at what was seen here, it actually looks more modern, and it doesn't. It's not just, you know, that slapped together thing that we've seen in the mobile betas. And when this actually launches, it's going to just be that fresh lick of paint. I don't know if you're able to see this at this point in this video when you were watching because of the size and color of them. But do you have any comments on the icons that were shown?
No, I don't.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was something that you would have had to zoom in and see on that front. So it wasn't, you know, something that they showed full screen with that. But in any case, something else players have always been wanting to happen. The shop has been moved in-game and made more friendly. And this is, of course, the shop that allows you to purchase bonds, allows you to purchase membership, and allows you to purchase keys. Because on the existing mobile client and on the desktop client, you need to be booted to a website in order to do that. And you know, we all know how annoying that is to happen. So that is something that will happen before the game launches on mobile as well, which is another thing we highlighted as needing to happen in the past. Do you have any comments on the live stream before we move on to the Q&A that they did?
No, I mean, I really enjoyed the way we were walked through the tutorial, and I have really high hopes. Like, you know, we talk about the first time user experience, and everything that they explained just seems like there has been so much time put into that. And like I said, RuneScape on mobile, it's a little bit different experience, and it's pretty cool in a lot of ways. And I really like how they have took a piece of the game and used it to kind of just lead you into everything there is. But it's not in the same way as Totoro Island. I think Totoro Island holds that special place because, I mean,
it's, you know, where we started.
Nostalgic. Yes, and it is nostalgia. I mean, it really is. And that's fine. There's a place for that. But I think these were really good choices for mobile.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Questions that came up. How long does the tutorial take to complete? The aim is for it to be about 5 minutes, currently taking about 10 minutes. Of course, when I did it, I think it was 7 or 8 minutes on my end. I was probably going a bit quicker on that. So that's that, and you know, that's perfectly understandable that they want it to be 5 minutes given the mobile audience. Will those rewards that were mentioned unlock incrementally or after mobile is launched? And we will unlock them incrementally, but everybody will gain access to them when mobile launches in June. So it's going to be something that we can all work together and push for on that front. And then somebody tried to get a little bit of information out of Mod Warden. Are there any other platforms that RuneScape will be coming to? No other announcements to be made at this time. And I think the one that everybody has in mind is the Nintendo Switch. If I had to,
oh,
put
that's
my fingers
the one.
On one. Yeah, I think so.
See, I was wondering about that because, you know,
say,
I mean,
so this is amazing. Thank you for everyone. I guess to just keep
talking.
Up with the used to for this one.
That was weird.
How long is the tutorial?
All right, we're good. I don't know how Twitch unmuted itself.
Well, okay. Oh, jeez.
Carry on.
All right. No, what I'm thinking is, since I am a new Xbox user, I saw that you can plug a keyboard and mouse into it.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you know, then it's possible to play a point and click, especially with the way Xbox is going with its cloud gaming and its remote play and all of that stuff. Could we get a Can we get a console port? At least an Xbox port.
You know, they definitely could do it, but there's two things that would need to happen for that. And the game would have to support controllers, because to be on Xbox, you definitely need to support controllers. Keyboard and mouse is optional. And the game engine would need to be able to run with DirectX, because I don't believe Xbox has OpenGL access.
I see.
So, but, you know, those are minor technical hurdles to come out, at least on the DirectX side, because, you know, before they moved to NXT, it did run for a bit on DirectX. But as for, you know, making the game work with a controller,
that's not as impossible as you might think, because you can do it with the Steam Link, and it's a little bit clunkier, but it's, I mean, you can do it. You click with the trigger and you move it with the stick. So, it's not all the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Somebody also asked if you could replay the mobile tutorial, and as with most tutorials, you can't do that. So that's a no on that one. What about the mobile UI for PCs with touchscreens? They said, yeah, this is a possibility, but not in the meantime. The goal is to ultimately push for consistency between platforms. So if you're on a PC, it should look like a PC RuneScape experience. Then, oh, sorry, did you want to?
I hope that one actually comes to be someday. Because, like, I don't know. I think it would help me do combat. Like, right. I really do.
And, I mean, there's also the whole Surface family of PCs as well.
That's true.
Yeah. Which actually just got an update this week, too, thinking about it. So. Then, this is your wheelhouse on the next one. Will RuneScape Mobile work on iPads? And the answer to that is yes, of course. The UI might not work particularly well at the moment, but the goal is to have it expand and fill and work nicely on iPads and tablets. And then Mod Warden reiterated a thing that we like to say here at RSBNB Update is that, you know, iPads are good for accessibility-constrained players who have difficulties with smaller screens or accessibilities on the iPad.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two things with when you're dealing with just, you know, mobile on a phone. Even the biggest screens are small, and they're little. It's just a little bit too small. It's very constrained, and if you use a like a voiceover, if you're an Apple user, use voiceover. You can't play anything, right? Like, you have to turn that off. But if you turn that off, you might not be able to tell what's going on as well. On the iPad, you can turn your voiceover off. You can kind of see what you're doing because it's bigger. And I don't think the UI is a big hurdle or anything. I was going to give a caveat to say that the bank can get a little tricky sometimes, but actually I think the items stand out better on mobile in my bank.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I just think the tablet experience is ideal. Especially if you're low vision, or, you know, it's probably good for, limited mobility, I would think, too.
Yeah.
Maybe some of these gestures.
I'd like to see RuneScape on one of them new iPad Pros with the M1. That would be fun. The Cypher outfit that was shown in the tutorial will be available to all players when that tutorial launches. And just some general questions before they wrapped up. Can two menus be open at once on mobile? Because some of the video that was shown only showed one open. And, you know, if you have the map open, you can definitely have an inventory or your skills open as well, and it will just use some of the negative space that would have been there had there been only one open. And they also said that quick chat on mobile will return in the future as well. So there we have it. RuneScape Mobile on the way this summer. Potentially June 17th, but maybe sometime in June, but definitely targeted at summer 2021. If you have anyone who is interested in this, or if you're interested in this, just head on over to the various app store, whichever one for your device, and express your interest and pre-register. It helps out everybody in the RuneScape community, and it's going to bring in a whole boatload of new players on there, and that's something I'm definitely going to be doing. I know I've already told a bunch of people about it. So with that being said, I'm very excited about this. Anything from you before we move on and talk about wishes?
No, I'm really, really excited. And if it is the 17th, then you know what that means.
That's launch day for us on a podcast day.
Well, for sure. But also, that means the summer Double XP is going to have to be in May, because they won't run a double XP that lasts for 10 days.
Right.
And then a 50% boost for another week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's going to have to be some separation there.
Yeah. And, you know, last double XP was February leading into March. So I think, you know, mid-May is probably when we're looking at it for.
Yep.
So.
You heard it here first.
Oh, and one more thing. There will be a live stream on Tuesday next week detailing some changes to a RuneScape skill, they said.
What can it be?
Are we getting a rework?
I don't know. My first initial gut reaction was crafting. I don't know why, but it was crafting, which seems like it's out of left field. So let's see.
I think fletching, honestly.
It needs work. Yeah. It needs love. But it also needs use.
Very true. And that's a whole other topic on itself, which we'll be talking about next week, probably in one way or the other. So almost done the RS section here, but we're just going to have a quick look at a post that was made by Mod Hooli on the RuneScape subreddit of all places, talking about gathering feedback for Iron Man wishes. So we get our first look at what the wishes could potentially be. They're still in development, and the way it's going to go is each wish will grant a certain number of benefits to players across a variety of categories, from XP bonuses like double XP to time bonuses like advancing time for your player-owned farm, through to value bonuses like gizmos that require no materials to make. And when you select a category of wishes, you'll be given a special item with charges for a whole host of potential bonuses in that category. The more potent the bonuses, the more charges it will cost. Now, who will get them? All players, including those not impacted by the lockout, will receive one wish. And the intention is to provide impacted players, including Iron Man accounts, with three wishes. Now, the question, of course, comes into what the limitation should look like. For Iron Man, they have already set up a few boundaries around the edges, such that instant value rewards that provide catch-ups in key impacted areas like gizmos, player-owned ports, or player-owned farm, or PVM, will be included. And he says this could cover anything from refreshing for another daily Reaper task to being able to select certain rune days for merchant stock and so on. That's an interesting one. And benefits for time-based activities such as speeding up completion of player ports voyages, advancing farm time, resetting D&D tokens for daily, weekly, and monthly limits are also going to be allowed for Iron characters, but what will not be allowed are any XP rate increases such as double XP time. So from the sounds of it, if you're not an Iron Man character, you'll be able to get some amount of double XP time with this.
Yeah.
And this is all part of their plan to do right from the login lockout. And they want to hear people's take on everything that we have just mentioned and what kind of options you'd like to expect to see, especially as an impacted Iron Man character. And while this information represents a broad area, Jagex would still like to know if players feel like there's any must-haves or if there's anything that should be steered clear from. And he closes by saying, if you were not impacted, please remember that impacted players were away from the game for some time and use it to frame any thoughts or feedback you have, too. That said, we'd love to know if there are any lines in the sand you feel we should draw when it comes to the integrity of the game mode. So this is more of a discussion about Iron Man than what everybody else is getting. But I think they're definitely right on the fact that there shouldn't be double XP time or XP increases for Iron Man characters. I don't have a specific Iron Man myself, so I can't really comment on what would be good. But David, if you were locked out, how would you feel as an Iron Man character?
I don't think there should be double XP. I think that the thing that most of the people I know who had a locked out Iron Man are annoyed about is certain dailies that are lost out on. So like Vizwax in particular, just because there's only one way to get that in the game.
Right.
And it's only one day. But for the most part, I mean, it seems silly to give Iron Man double XP for any reason. It's never been done before. I don't think that a precedent should be set to give double XP.
Yeah, what I'm seeing on the thread is lots of talk about D&D stuff like the Vizwax, the Red Sandstone, the Crystal Sandstone, Reaper Tasks.
And meat. One annoying thing is when all the returned Iron Men came back, all of their player-owned farms, you know, animals were diseased, and all of their food was at zero. And the only real source for feeding things like spiders and dinosaurs is the daily meat that you can buy at Ooglog. I mean, you're just not going to go kill cows for beef. Just would never do it.
Yeah, it takes far too long.
Right, and so losing out on, you know, say you had four active dinosaur pens, two spider pens, so you lost out on 6,000 raw meat because, and your animals are all diseased, and so you need 6,000 meat. So it'd be nice to like give Iron Man their maybe something like give them a fully topped off. Or like 1,000 of each mush or something. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, that might be an option. And, you know, some of these things aren't going to take full charges on that. What do we think about them giving out gizmos?
I mean, for regular gizmos, it's like nothing. For ancient gizmos, that's a pretty nice perk. I would maybe spend my wish on that because getting classic and historic components is a grind for Iron Man.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows if they're going to come perked or not. So,
I just mean like the gizmos
Shells.
Like,
okay.
The gizmo shells. You have to get classic or historic components to make the gizmo shells for the ancient gizmo shells.
Right.
And then that's cumbersome. I mean, for a main, you just buy them on the GE, no problem. But for an Iron Man, you have to go farm them yourself.
All right. Fair enough.
I don't like the wishes. I don't like the concept of the wishes. I just don't like the wishes. I feel like you can't, in many ways, you can't get it back. The thing that you could get back is like what David's talking about of maybe instead of doing double XP, you double the daily challenges or what they would be able to do. Essentially like doubling an opportunity. Between that and giving some kind of compensation financially, real compensation of like, hey, here's a membership, whatever. I mean, that's kind of what you do. How are you going to give Iron Man double XP when that's not what they?
They're not getting double XP.
Yeah, they're not. They're not. Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about these wishes that I don't like. I don't know if it's the concept. I just don't like it.
I mean, if you think about it, like, Iron Man did miss out on a lot. So if you did 20 minutes of dailies, and dailies are like really how you function. I mean, that's you know, maybe 70 VizWax on average times 30 if you're locked out for a month. So it's about 2,100 VizWax. And then if you're a more endgame Iron Man but haven't finished Herblore, 130K XP a day times 30, it's like almost 4 million Herblore XP that you just like lost out on, which that's pretty hefty. I mean, Iron Man definitely lost out on a huge amount of stuff from not being able to log in. And it can be made back in the same way that it can be for a main, because you can't just buy everything on the Grand Exchange.
And looking at this, I'm not sure what I'm going to pick when I get my singular wish.
Yeah.
Nope. Shane, you'll get whatever the best damn thing there is available. You will pick it.
You're right. In my own perspective, I don't know what it'll be, but we'll see. We'll see. But anyways, let's. If you're an Iron Man character, definitely go provide your feedback on this. And as we always say, when providing feedback on anything that Jagex posts, please, please do be civil. So, all right, let's move on. We got a couple of questions, and before we do that, I'd just like to thank our Patreon supporters for this week's episode. I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, CGB900, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, CookBeeBlocks, Danny C., Diana, Duramax, Gabrielle, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stobby, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us in terms of doing all the fun and wacky things that we do here at RSBNB Update. Speaking of that, we actually have our roundtable happening this Saturday, April 24th at 8 p.m. game time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Saturday. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a PVM roundtable for once. Who knows? It just might be, given what I've been doing this week. But you can sign up and gain access to join in on those, gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits for as little as a dollar a month at patreon.com/RSBNB. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week, and you'll also gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. Last week, we had a clip from pre-show where Tannis detailed his concerns about the COVID vaccines and whether or not he'd be licking banisters after getting his vaccine. So those are the fun still things you get to see. Oh, you got it?
No, I'm still waiting on my shot.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm waiting on my shot. Watch out. It's partay time. And what the hell, Shane? What is going on in Canada, dude? You know, I'm never going to get healthcare now because of you guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I'm never going to get universal healthcare because you guys couldn't get your shots out. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn it. But nonetheless, visit patreon.com/RSBNB if you want to sign up currently. We're at $160 a month. $164, working towards $200. 200 patrons will get a special thank you mail out. And should we, you know, for some reason ever reach 500, we'll do the Hot Ones Challenge, where we'll subject our taste buds to a wide range of spice. David, do you like spicy food?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, here's another one we can rope in, Tannis.
Mm-hmm. To some extent, yeah.
What did you say the worst one was that they used? The ghost pepper?
No, ghost pepper's probably like mid, maybe starting to get into 6, 7, 8, right? Yeah, no, maybe like, yeah, it's probably mid-range, starting to get real hot. But you ain't seen nothing until they start to get into like, they get into the things that are like Carolina Reapers and then stuff that just doesn't even exist. They just come up with names of it like nuclear bomb. It's going to blow your freaking taste buds off type thing. Yeah.
Well, this should be good fun should we ever get there. And, you know, this will be, as we said, a special video version of the show. And if it happens some point next year, who knows, maybe a live on location episode. We'll just have to wait and see. But nonetheless, thank you so much, everybody, for making everything we do here possible. Patreon.com/RSBNB. All right, question time. So first question is from Tim, and it's a PVM-related question. Do we think that Jagex will release some kind of PVM mode that allows the user to practice certain boss mechanics or certain roles without having to find a team? And I wonder, as an extension to this, David, would something like this even be possible? Examples he gives are all the different roles in raids, bomb tank or base tank for Rago, some other examples that were given. Because I think these are largely all player-designed critters, right? Or player-designed methods, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think to some extent that they were designed with the intention that that's how the bosses would be done. Like, I think those are really well-designed group bosses. But yeah, I mean, they're all player-designed.
Strategies.
Yeah, I mean, they never give you the strategy of how to do something.
Yeah. Do you think that it would even be possible to design a testing ground for something like this?
What does it mean by testing ground?
Well, just, you know, basically like a practice mode where you can practice bomb tank or base tank for Virago or all the different roles and raids.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there would be a way of doing that. I don't. It sounds like a lot of work. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot of development work.
Theory, you could go into Virago practice mode, but you're still paying for your equipment drain and your food supplies and potions.
Well, and you'd have to have other people with you.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe, I mean, would they just have like dummies performing the other role or something? Can you get Max to stop skilling to come to Virago with you in base?
Right. And see, that's the thing. I don't necessarily know how you would write something like that to have the same level of dynamics that a player does.
The other problem is that a huge part of becoming a really good at your role at a boss is being able to react accordingly when someone else makes a mistake. So that's part of the other problem is that, maybe with certain teams, everyone's going to do everything right, but people make mistakes. And if you're going with someone who's less experienced, then it's not going to really help you to do a version where the dummy who is doing the other roles is doing everything perfectly, because it never goes perfectly in learner teams.
Right. Right. All right. So, I mean, I think while this would be nice in theory, the answer is that unless you drastically increase the amount of AI that you can write into RuneScape, you're not going to be able to pull something like this off unless you have actual people there for it. And yeah, based on at that point, you're better off putting the combat team towards some other kind of PVM update.
It would be pretty funny to have the signature heroes come PVM with you, though.
Yeah, it would. That would be. A fun group of people to use for the models on that. So who knows? Maybe one day for April Fools. All right.
Except Ozan would just bring Death Touch darts.
Yeah, there you go.
What would
Ariane do?
You're getting this,
that would be totally Ozan. that would fit.
Ariane. I think Ariane would cast some sort of spell that made the boss do zero damage, but also give zero loot as a consequence, something like that.
All right. Next one's from Diana. What do you make for a good seasonal event? Community, community, community. I remember, I think it was Christmas 2016 when we had the skilling areas in the Lumbridge Crater and we had all the other little activities that you could do, the fun snow ambiance and whatnot. I think that culminates and sums it all up well, you know, just a fun little mini quest off to do to the side. Santa's there, and it's just a fun community gathering spot. And I think, you know, you can have an event like the Butterflies that we just had, but that's not really a community event because people really aren't drawn into that hub for the purpose of doing those skills. Because, you know, after the initial butterfly boost was gone, I think people moved off on to do their own things. I think the Lumbridge Crater being a more centralized area and bigger, it's able to pull that off better with the beach and potentially winter events as well. So I'd like to see winter events return to the Lumbridge Craters the same way as it was in Christmas 2016, I believe. So community, community, community. How about you, Tanis?
Yeah. When I think back to the events that have been in the crater, it has been that community. You know, the beach definitely had the community feel to it. Even these big world events had more of a sense of community. That and the beach, I feel like, probably had the most sense of community. So,
Also the knights. Is that a world event though? The Black Knights invasion. Everyone was there.
It's true. That
was when they rebuilt Falador.
Yeah. The Black Knight. I think most people were there because they made the XP list like broken. Because that was when I made an Iron Man, and I went from like 10 to 80 magic in like 2 days.
Yikes.
Yeah. But those are like the ones that I really, really stand out to me. And I think it is because of that community aspect. And I think regular seasonal events, you know, sometimes they can be hit or miss. And it really does depend on if it brings people into them and makes you want to like play, because it's one thing to be like, okay, it's good XP, I need to go there every day, but does it make you want to like message your friend on Discord and be like, hey, what are you doing? You know, you want to go over here and mess around at, you know, the Lumbridge Crater, or, you know, do whatever.
Oh my God. You literally sound like a drug dealer right now.
And I should actually clarify that it was Christmas 2014 that was in the Lumbridge Crater, believe it or not, that I was thinking of. I thought it was way later than that, but it was Christmas 2014.
But it's the same thing. You see the same through line with all of the major holiday events that we remember that really, really stand out. That Christmas event was very much like it was community, because I remember like hanging out and talking to friends and stuff there.
Yeah.
The first beach was very much, well, the first few beaches have been, you know, very much like that. And the Halloween event at Dev's house was so about the community, because the more people you had, and it was tricky because the more people you had there, the better and the funner. But at the same time, the more you had, the more buggier and laggy it got.
Right. But, and in addition to, you know, the community aspect, what you also mentioned with the deaths event at Drainer's house was not only the community aspect, but the ambience as well. Because that was very Halloween, that event.
It was, and there was an incentive to work together instead of, you know, just being on your own. So I think that may have something to do with it too. And we haven't seen a lot of events that have taken advantage of that. I don't think. I mean, we've had plenty of them where it's like, okay, here, add this tissue paper to whatever paper mache thing we're making that season. But rarely do we do it like they did at Dev's house, where we're all attacking at the, you know what I mean? The more people you had on it, the quicker it went down, the more XP.
Right.
I mean, the more points you got, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. David, anything else on that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I
still miss world events. I think world event 1 and 2 were pretty fun.
Yeah, those were good too. And I think that, you know, it'd be great to have more of those. But the question just becomes, how much influence do they have on the actual thread that the game takes after it? Because those were very impactful in terms of determining the story going forward. You know, we ended with Samurak being taken down a tier and Bandos dying at the end of that. So it was literally in the player's hands there. So I think if you did the world events, except without taking them to that level of impact, I think you would also have something. And, you know, I don't think there'd be anything wrong with, you know, running one or two of those a year at various points. So I think that would factor in as well. And once again, it just comes back to that central thread of community, community, community.
Plus they could rig it. World Event 3 was clearly rigged.
Yeah, that's why I just mentioned that one.
Tuska was destroying us, and then all of a sudden they're like, nah, y'all are going to kill Tuska. but Tuska was for sure going to win. And then they rigged it so that the players won.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to picks of the week. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb or just visit update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right, Tanis, I was going to use this as pick of the week, but I saw you were going to do it too, so I'm going to let you handle this. What happened this week?
We have the first flight on another planet. So it's so cool. The Mars rover had a helicopter, and it actually flew, and NASA has a video of it, and it's really neat. Like, I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, this kind of reminded me of the little scout robot in Empire Strikes Back. That's like on Hoth. It kind of looks like that. But then it started flying, and I thought, oh no. This could be our first droning of another planet. Boy, we've gotten sophisticated.
Well, it's not armed, so there's that.
Right, but
as far as we know, Shane.
As far as we know, right. But yeah, it was neat, and it proved that they could do it, and I think that's kind of a big deal because, you know, it's a different atmosphere. I'm sure all of the brilliant guys at NASA knew exactly how it would act and everything, but
yeah,
I'm like, wow, that's really cool.
I forget the exact number, but I think the Martian atmosphere is around 10% as thick as the Earth's atmosphere. So what that means is that if you have a certain amount of thrust generated on Earth, you got to effectively magnify that amount of thrust by that amount to perform the same thing on Mars, though not totally, because of course Mars gravity is a little bit less than Earth. So, you know, there's lots of fun physics things that you have to take into account with this as well. I think just to, you know, bring it back to terrestrial terms, I think one of the terms they said for the helicopter itself is that a traditional helicopter here on Earth has its rotor spin at about 400 to 600 RPM. Mm-hmm. This one, I think they said, is around 2,500 RPM.
Okay, so that's how they were making up the difference, had to run higher RPM.
Yeah, and plus this isn't, you know, like a huge helicopter. It's, you know, something that is akin to a modern drone here. It's a 1.8 like kilogram body here. Let's see, 4 pounds on Earth, 1.5 pounds on Mars. Total length of the rotors, 4 feet tip to tip, and can fly up to 5 meters in the sky.
Oh, so what we know then is you're going to need a lot of power and some big propellers.
And it's not 10%. The atmosphere is less than 1% as dense as Earth's. So I was off by a factor of 10 on that. But, you know, this is a huge deal. when it comes to this. And, you know, there's a fun little GIF that was also posted to social media showcasing the success of this, the helicopter just bobbing up, and we got a picture of it that was sent back too, so we could see that it was actually successful. You can see it take off and land again. So all in all, a really fun and special thing to be able to see this happening in full color from a different planet away. And the final thing I'll say on this, and I appreciate you doing this for Pick of the Week, is that Mars is about 11 light minutes away. So you send a signal to Mars to tell a helicopter to do something, you're not going to know for 22 minutes after you press that send whether or not you were successful.
Oh, I wondered how long what the delay on that would be.
Yeah.
11 minutes or 22 minutes. Interesting.
Yep. In any case, I'm going to do my pick of the week now. And Apple had an event today that was called the Spring Loaded event. Their whole idea behind this one is that, we got a new 24-inch Apple Silicon-based iMac. We also have new iPads that use the same chips as that iMac and the laptops and Mac Mini that were announced last year. So there you have it. You now have MacBook equivalent performance in an iPad Pro, which is absolutely astounding to think about when it comes to the tablet form factor. And, you know, I think that an iPad Pro would make a really interesting RuneScape machine, thinking about it, once RuneScape Mobile comes out on that. You can get 11 and 12.9-inch models, and for the first time ever, the iPads have a RAM option. You can configure the amount of RAM that you get on your iPad, too, as well. And they also introduced a purple iPhone 12, as well as AirTags, which the idea behind these is you pick up AirTags and then you can, say, attach an AirTag to your key or some other item that you might lose, and then you'd be able to effectively just find where you left something using the Find My app on your phone. So I think AirTags are kind of the stalker in all this that, you know, we don't realize how much this is going to change things, but I think AirTags going forward is going to be something that everybody, whether it be from Apple or a different manufacturer, something like AirTags is something that's going to completely change the way we go about living our lives on this regard. No more lost keys, no more lost bike, that kind of thing. And I think the thing that I'm most pleased with out of this is that they updated the Apple TV, but they also did away with the hideous Siri remote that had a touchpad on it that was just absolutely horrible to use. And we actually have a modern looking remote control now for the Apple TV that is hopefully a little bit more usable than the last Siri incarnation was. So overall, if you like the color purple, or it's time for a new iPad Pro, or you're thinking of moving to the Mac line, now's good time to do it with the iMacs that came out and the iPad Pros. But I think AirTags are the hidden gem in all this. So, all right, let's move on to achievements then. Starting off, we have Lore Deluxe with 99 Archaeology on April 21st, Sipe de Boo with 99 Fishing on April 20th, and Kedgeworth with 120 Invention and 120 Attack on April 20th.
Nice. And moving on from there, we have New Hero with 120 Slayer on April 20th, Shamrock Soup with 99 Cooking on the 20th, and Taffing Spy with 99 Runecrafting on the 20th.
So we have Drizzen with 99 Archaeology on April 19th. Max Quest Points with 120 Archaeology on April 19th. Mind with 200 mil Magic XP on April 19th. And Snow Light with 99 Mining on April 19th.
Well done.
Nice. Okay, moving on, we have Drizzen with 99 Invention on April 18th, and Gooey Cookie with 99 Hunter and Divination on April 17th.
Nicely done. And then we have Duke Juker with 99 Archaeology on April 16th. Rex Compidium with 99 Hunter on the 16th. Scarecrow with 120 Construction on the 16th. And Surge Aurora with 99 Fishing also on the 16th. Well done, everyone. Well done. And as we wrap up the show, I'll just remind listeners that if you want to become a guest on the podcast or you want to write Informer articles for us, you can do that as well. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/help and register your interest. We've already got a good amount of feedback from that list, so thank you to everybody who signed up there. We've been in contact. And before we wrap up and talk about what we've been up to, Skill of the Month has ended, and a big congratulations goes out to Bears OP for gaining 34.5 million fishing XP. Tannis, you came in second with 22.2, and Froggerman 45 came in third with 10.8. What do you think, Tannis? What was your thoughts on this competition?
This was fun. This was really, really fun, and huge congratulations to the Bears OP. You, my friend, are indeed OP. That's just, it's incredible. I mean, huge number, especially in fishing. You definitely convinced me to stay in retirement. This is what happens when old boxers come out and try to fight again. They get beat up on. But that being said, I broke my own personal fishing XP record in a competition. It was 18 and now I'm at 22. So I bettered it by 4 mil, but, it was fun. It was rough. Once I saw that he was going to take me to the last minute of the last day, I knew I couldn't probably hang in like that. I was really hoping I would like crush his spirit once I took the lead, and that did not happen at all. Not even a little bit. So when he came back, I guess the reverse happened. I'm like, yeah, don't think I'm going to be able to make it. But that was a fun competition. That was a really good one, and he earned it.
Nice.
Didn't take it easy in the beginning.
What you been up to on RS otherwise?
You know, it's funny because I actually haven't left the waterfall. I got so close to my 120 that I'm like, I'm just gonna stay here until we're done.
Nice.
A little over 4 mil. I think 5 mil-ish to go, and I'm just gonna chill until we get it.
How about you, David, aside from the dinos?
Well, on my main, I've been mostly skilling. I got 200 mil fishing done and 200 mil farming done in the past month, and I'm now working on woodcutting and mining. So I'm getting close to 120 mining, and I have like 50 mil woodcutting XP or so, so I still have a ways to go.
What are you doing for woodcutting?
Golden bamboo.
Okay, so just once a day, and then that's it, eh?
Yeah, just contracts, yeah.
All right, sounds good.
And then on my Ironman, I've been doing two things. So I've been doing a lot of skilling to try to max. So I have maybe 5 skills left or so to max. So I'm working on max cape for my Ironman, and then I've also been doing a fair amount of Telos on there because I really want to get either a Saren God bow or a ZGS. I actually, about 10 minutes before I got on the show, I got a dormant Staff of Sliske on my Iron Man.
Nice. So
that's my first dormant. Unfortunately, it's the least useful of the three, but still pretty happy to see it. So, you know, I've got a fair number of orbs and one dormant so far, and so I just need to get the other dormants, and hopefully that won't take too long. But I'm looking forward to this week of just pushing in Rage, because I'd really like to get 2K in Rage on my Iron Man. I think that'd be fun to get 2K in Rage, even though I'm still pretty under-geared. I've still got a tier 70 T tier 70 wand, tier 70 shield, so it'd be nice to get that milestone with relatively mediocre gear.
Nice, nice. Well, as for me this week, I've been killing since yesterday. We are recording this early. Maybe you guys will hear it earlier, but I've been up to the Rex Matriarchs. I managed to kill the blue one. I haven't really tried the red one yet because, as I said, I need to purchase some mage gear, but I've been enjoying my time at the green one. And as I said, who knows? Maybe at this weekend's round table, we'll have a bit of a PVM experience. Who knows on that? So aside from that, Yak Track, I finished Yak Track, and I only used two skips for this entire Yak Track experience this time around, because I thought, you know, we have the time. We have the extra 2 weeks. So I just used those and I just went through the task, and I actually enjoyed it more without using skips. So I think there might be a question to, you know, maybe not add 2 weeks every time, but maybe add another week to it. Who knows? So now it's just going to be a question of what do I do? Because prior to this Yak Track, I was still getting 120 archaeology, and I still had archaeology things to finish. So this is the first time since March of 2020 that I haven't really had an active goal on RS, believe it or not.
Did you get 120 archaeology?
Yes, I did. Yes. I did.
You could get 200 mil archaeology.
I could, but that would necessitate getting 200 mil farming first. And I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I mean, if I was to do it, I think we got lots of great archaeology spots that we could do it with. So who knows? Never saying never. I think I can safely say that archaeology is now my second favorite skill in game.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
So. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there's anything else then for this episode. So thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, David, for providing your PVM perspective to us on the Rex Matriarchs. Look forward to hearing from you again soon, hopefully, in terms of PVM updates that arrive. But if you want to get these podcasts delivered automatically to you, you can subscribe. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe and click on or tap on whichever service is your favorite. We got Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBnb Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.